Welcome back, everybody. Adam, pleasure to be here.
Likewise, likewise, Giotto.
Long time, long time. What's going on?
Damn, it has been a long time. It's probably 2 months now, no?
Well, I think the last one was July 4th, actually, or somewhere around there.
Holy shit. So yeah, it's been close to 2 months now.
Actually, it must have been just before then, because I had to work on the 4th of July. So I think, I think it was like sometime around, it must have been right before then. Yeah, so we're getting close to the 2 month mark. Not good, but
I know we're gonna eventually, after the election, make sure it's a weekly thing.
So this is all Adam's fault, by the way, everybody.
Yeah, blame it on me. I'll take the blame. I got all this fucking election bullshit, and then just finishing up the PhD. So my bad.
Oh man, so Clint, he's in the woods as usual.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm jealous of Clint. I wish I was in the woods.
Where'd he go? He goes to Michigan or what?
I think so. I think, yeah. Fucking living the good life, surrounded by greenery and animals and none of these assholes being protesting on one side, rioting on the other.
Yeah, man. Speaking of protesting, what in the fuck is going on in Chicago?
I don't know, dude. We have a weak-spined, well, more or less a spineless mayor, and just people who have no idea what it is they want, really. They're protesting. Well, they're rioting. They're rioting for the sake of stealing shit.
Well, I got a question. Because, like, every week I see new shit about these just high levels of gun violence all over Chicago.
Whoa. That's not a narrative we want to go down. That never happens in Chicago. No, nobody shoots anybody in Chicago. That's just, you know, that's propaganda by the Tea Party.
Did you guys defund the police there? What's the deal?
I hope not. No. I think it's just the mayor's office is fucking with everything, and nobody wants to go to the south side of Chicago as a cop, because automatically it results in, you know, fucking rioting. Like, anytime the police are there, it's like, you know, fighting. Not anytime. I mean, there's obviously some people that want them there. People that, you know, whose children were shot while they were watching TV. They understand. It's like, you know, these gangs, just because the police isn't there doesn't mean that, you know, they're not still doing shady shit.
Well, it's like two cities I see in particular that continually have, like, these weird spikes in protests and violence. One is Los Angeles, which is, like, continually, for some reason, there's, like, all these protests in Beverly Hills. So I can imagine, like, a lot of that is driven by people that probably aren't that oppressed. Now, granted, yes, there are people that show up to Beverly Hills to protest, whatever. But that being said, with Chicago, it's a little bit of a different story, but constantly it's like every night I see something different about what's going on in that city, and it just seems to be an absolute disaster. But you live there, so.
Yeah, it's fucking wild. Just in August, we had 41 homicides from people being shot and killed, and 347 total people shot. So, yeah, those are like a city under siege numbers. Like, from what I understand, here it is. If you go to heyjackass.com, which is a Chicago site that follows how many people died, a person is shot in Chicago every 2 hours and 8 minutes, and a person is murdered every 11 hours and 32 minutes in Chicago this year. So, you know, it's not a place you want to, you know, come and visit. And now with all the rioting, all these shops, you know, 66 stores were broken into last week. From Monday to Sunday, they were rioting and stealing shit. All these businesses are saying, fuck this. Like, you know, two times in a row now that we've been robbed. Like, all our stock was stolen. Like, I'm not paying taxes to fucking be in the downtown. I don't want to be in Chicago if this is how it's going to look like. You know, for 3 months, I've been shut down. For another couple of weekends, I've been robbed. I'm out of here.
So whereabouts in Chicago is it? Are they robbing stores in Southside as well as throughout?
No, it's like Magnificent Mile. But it's like the Magnificent Mile, like downtown Chicago, yeah. Where the Bean is, where, you know, where all the shopping districts are. And obviously they're robbing local places here and there, whenever they can, whenever nobody shoots at them, nobody, you know. How come they don't come out to the suburbs to do that? Mostly because people are fed up, people are pissed off. You know, that we so many people have been, you know, indoors for so long that they don't want to see any more of this fucking nonsense. Just like live and let live. You no need to rob and fucking be angry. Okay, Trump upsets you. Like, power to you. Like, fuck off now.
So I'm curious, do you see, like, you know, a lot of the people are talking now, sort of like, we've now lost the utility of living in big cities. Have a lot of your friends started considering moving outside of Chicago and going, yeah, I don't know, wherever else?
I've had four people that are moving out of the city. They're selling their apartments right now. So, and there's a market for it. People are buying shit up.
Well, there's always going to be a market for it. Like, people are going to take advantage of this. I'm just curious, like...
I have four, yeah. Four friends who are moving out of the city.
The death of, like, the idea of living in a metropolis, and people are like, look, if I absolutely don't have to be there and I can work remote, then I'm just going to get out of here, or what?
Well, yeah, I feel it's that. And, I mean, you live in the big city. You know how rent is. Rent is fucking expensive.
Yeah, it's expensive.
You pay way too much for things that you're not getting. And nowadays, like, everything's closed, you know? Or at least there's so much restriction on everything. Restaurants, you can only have so many people. Movie theaters are closed. Entertainment venues are closed. So it's like... Living in the city now is—it's like here's some concrete, here's some asphalt, and here's glass buildings. Where's the greenery of the suburbs?
Well, I have like a question about that as well, right? So like all great cities across the world, right, are like notorious for skylines, mm-hmm. right? But skylines are basically office buildings.
Well, yeah, and so and really, they're only American thing. And Asian, well, really.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, they exist, right? Obviously not like Eastern Europe, but like. We'll say London, I guess Paris, you could have like at La Défense, you can have different places throughout Europe, not as ubiquitous as you see in the United States, but like the American skyline, we'll say, right? You're correct in saying that that is the American sort of thing. Maybe also Canada, like more populated areas. If this is the case where like people aren't going to go back to offices anymore, like what are these buildings going to represent?
Like, I mean, they've always represented like, you know, big money. Big money and
but it's like it's useless now, right? Like big business is going to be like, what's the point of like spending all this money on?
Well, and the thing is, you know, great, you have to remember is some of these buildings that were built in like, you know, the beginning of the century, like the heating's outdated, the air conditioning's outdated, so much of this stuff is just like, you know, shit. So like most businesses were already moving to like newer buildings with like internet better internet connection, better heating and cooling. So now these monuments of the past are just going to stand there. And the way I see it is, I assume they're going to try to make it into like apartment buildings of some sort. If businesses aren't taking it.
How is that going to take place, right? I mean, it's like, God, like, can you imagine taking places like the Sears Tower or whatever the fuck it's called now and converting it into like an upper class apartment complex?
I have no idea how that would work. I feel like most rich people don't want to even be in cities. Like,
most rich people are going to go elsewhere, right? I mean, I think that's a larger debate now. Where, like, if you have the ability and you have basically you're allowed to like work remotely in terms of like anywhere within, say, the continental 48, or say like even further, so long as you have broadband connection. Why are you going to live in downtown Chicago? Now, personally, yes, like Chicago is a beautiful city. There's a lot of good stuff there. That goes without saying. But if you can't access that anymore, vis-a-vis bars, restaurants, nightlife, culture, social activities, why are you going to spend $3,500 a month to live in a high rise in downtown Chicago when your office isn't even there anymore? It's like,
not only that, but you have like no value invested into the apartment. You don't own it. Renting it for $35,000, like, you just buy a house. Exactly. Like, it's such a waste of money.
I would assume these people would buy them. I mean, if you're talking that kind of cash, but yeah, exactly. I mean, people could get, you know, sort of enthralled with the idea of living in like X historical relics that, right, or representative of like big money or whatever. I do find it kind of rather interesting though, like, what would happen if just people were just done with it? Like, what the fuck?
But they won't
do?
Be. I mean, no, maybe. It's just a swing. It's going to swing back. Like, people are going to move back to the city in like 2-3 years when like this pandemic thing is kind of like swept under and like, you know, semi-controlled. People are going to move back.
Well, so long as they have this vaccine, which I think is hilarious too, because right, like Europe is on a rise again and everything else. And it's like, I think people are finally realizing like it's just going to it's a disease that a lot of people can get and a lot of people can just work through. Has its issues, but like, I don't know. I just think we're so deeply invested now. And obviously, like, you have to think about the amount of money that's going to be made from like, everybody's like, no, increase testing. We need more testing. It's like, think about the companies that are producing these tests. They're like, fuck yeah.
Oh, they're made billions. Like,
oh God, who knows?
I feel like this whole like scheme now is just... Obviously, yeah, Corona's real and all that. I'm not denying that it's not real, but the business made on it is just wow. There's so much, so many people made so much money. It's
well, sickening. I think it's a microcosm, right? Of like, you know, these multilateral agreements that a lot of people want to believe are for the greater good, yet behind closed doors, there. I mean, look, if you're sitting on pot on top of a gold mine, like, are you gonna walk away from it?
Of course not. Yeah, it's like keep on testing. Make sure there's a lot of tests and.
Well, dude, think about how much money these companies are gonna make. Like, you know, AstraZeneca, the Oxford deal. Not to mention, like, you know, there's like 40 different other ones that have already have deals to basically produce upwards of, you know, several billion vaccines or several hundred million vaccines. Like, that is just cash money.
I think the whole idea of the vaccine is kind of ridiculous. It's like, it's just going to be a flu shot for COVID. Like, you're unable to eradicate it. And most people don't understand that. They still think, like, I'm going to get the shot and that's it. I'm going to go fucking wild at the bars. Like,
what are the differences? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm not a virologist, but like, I'm curious, you know, and there's people I know that are. I'm curious, like, what's the difference between like this idea of, okay, you can get a flu shot, that's like our best guess, versus like, all right, we can vaccinate you against tuberculosis, and we can vaccinate you against, you know, measles, mumps, and rubella, and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah, but a lot of those are bacterial, no?
No, those are all viruses.
Or it is, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, we should Google this. I mean, obviously, neither one of us should be talking about this.
You know clearly. What? Fuck it. Let's talk about it. You know, this is what America's about, talking about ideas. If we don't get it right the first time, somebody will correct us. I mean, that's the whole point of a dialogue. Fuck it.
Right. Now, so the measles is a viral infection, right? So all of these are viral infections, right? And you produce obviously, like, producing antibodies, whatever. I mean, that's an interesting question, right? Like, as rampant as these diseases were, right? And there's obviously, like, mutations and different strains. The global community and scientists around the world were able to actually, like, stop this from happening, right?
Yeah.
You know, you think about tuberculosis, you think about these other things that basically were extremely deleterious to society writ large. They were able to figure this thing out. Now, like, the way that they talk about COVID, it's like almost as though we're reinventing science, right? It's like,
but I think a lot of that has to do with how quickly the virus is able to mutate. Like, if there's way too much mutant DNA.
I think that's like, a fair point to state, though. Yeah. But I mean, like, obviously, like, that's obviously the case for, like, most viruses. And I think to state it in the way that they do to, say, the general public, it's disingenuous, right? Because you could say these things, and you're talking to a bunch of people that don't know, in a very deep sense, anything about, you know, immunology or any of these things, right? See, so it's like, it's mutating super rampant, and there's these new strains, and it's almost as though, like, it's a fucking ad campaign.
It is. That's the way I feel about it, too. I'm glad you brought it up, because that's the brilliant way of putting it. It's like selling you the next IT virus. This is the next hip one. This is the one that's going to wipe everybody out. And here's like all the news media kind of advertising for it and telling you how much it's going to kill and how much it mutates and all this nonsense. But in the end, it's like, I don't know. It's why don't you talk about like health and how to make sure your immune system works better? Why don't you talk about how the virus actually works instead of being like, you know, it mutates a lot. Like, cool. What does that mean? And how does it mutate? Like, how come the media doesn't talk about that?
Well, I'd be curious to see. I'm just, like, Googling this now. And obviously, this is old. I can't actually find the right article, so this is not even worth, like, saying in a different way than what I was hoping to say. But I would be curious to better understand and see the information and data that exists on to what extent does Big Pharma lobby and invest into corporations like Fox, CNN, The Washington Post, New York Times. How much money do they provide to subsidize these newspapers?
That would be a good research topic.
Because if that's the case, and it's just like, so like the big question is, right, about like the benevolence of Jeff Bezos, which is like always like this big conversation, right? And he owns Washington Post, and Amazon is continually like under sort of like, you know, the white hot light or whatever you want to say underneath the microscope. It's like, to what extent are outside influences with a shit ton of money basically like, no, like here's the storyline, here's what you're going to push, here's what people, air quotes, need to know, and this is how we're going to move forward in terms of basically pushing out this vaccine. I mean, to a very large extent, what's very interesting, what's it called, Sputnik 5, right, the Russian vaccine, hasn't killed anybody yet. That's interesting.
Yeah, that we know of.
Well,
I mean, let's be honest. I mean,
well, that we know, not
several people have taken it and became bears within 24 hours. So
it's a space race for sure. But I mean, to a large extent as well, like, you know, Oxford's vaccine that they used, I believe they're using primate DNA. Like, oh, they were through like phases one and two relatively quickly with zero fucking side effects. So if like the same approach was being taken by Russian scientists, and yeah, it didn't go through phase three, but now this is like a pandemic, but now this is like a new space race, right? In like the new Cold War. I don't know. Maybe it is what it is. And it would be hilarious to see, say, countries like Vietnam or Cuba or Venezuela, you know, or majority of the third world that's willing to like sign on for a Russian trial. What if it works?
Well, that's good. I'm very pro if it works. I mean,
but what does that mean, like, geopolitically? Like, all of a sudden, Russia saved the world.
Yeah, power to them. I think the people who hated on them for completely different reasons. Like, I don't like Russia because of its human rights violations, but fuck, if they saved the world, they saved the world. Like, props to them.
It's interesting. Interesting stuff. So, speaking of Russia, I saw recently that they're still pushing Russiagate to, increase the chances of a Biden nomination. I'm curious, what do you think about everything that's going on?
He's already
recently
nominated, no? I thought
well,
he is
I mean, like a presidential nomination.
Yeah, that's so, what I mean. He is nominated. Like, I mean, you mean winning?
Winning, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Russiagate thing's done and over with. Anyone who's pushing that is either retarded or not up to par on any of this.
I don't know, man. What do you think is going to happen? We got Kamala Harris. She's back. I didn't think that she would come back, but then I kind of did, and then I didn't. Now she is, and they said she wouldn't. Now it is. Again,
they only put her up because she has the best name recognition. But like having her as the VP is kind of, I don't know. It's very hypocritical because if you remember in one of the debates, she called Biden a racist, and then she gave an example of a time that he was racist. And then all of a sudden she said, at the time she said she would never, ever support anybody like him because he's pro-busing and he's anti-blacks and, you know, all this. And then the moment she was given the opportunity to be VP, she jumped on it. And frankly, any American that sees that, in my opinion, they probably think this spineless human being, like this gutless, worthless human being that has no opinion of their own. They're just there power grab. Like, they will not vote for that.
So, I mean, what do you think, though? I mean, like, I believe in the silent majority. Now, again, look, Trump supporter, 100% not. But, like, again, like, this was exactly what happened in 2016. You give me two terrible candidates, I'm not going to vote. And I think that this is completely... Look, if there's anything that needs to take place, there needs to be a reform in how we understand the election process of the United States.
Know what I hope? I hope there's a huge push for third party. I hope that libertarian...
Maybe. It will probably be historical, Adam. But I mean, to the extent to which like the average American is going to understand that is just such an issue.
I feel like this might be the election that most people are not going to go to vote. They're just so fed up with everything.
I mean, it is hilarious. You know, I think what's really funny is like Congress, right? They're on vacation now to what, September something, September 15th.
Yeah, dude, fuck them. And like, all of Congress.
They never pushed through that new bill for people that are basically waiting for their unemployment checks, did they?
No, they didn't do anything. They argued about fucking if certain movie theater company chains are going to get bailouts as opposed to like talking about the 37 plus million people on unemployment. Like, where's that conversation? God. Like, I don't understand how these people are in power and nobody's pulling out a guillotine to just fucking go chop, chop, chop these people. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable how spineless these politicians are. Like, you know, all this talk about, like, if anything happens to this country, we'll be there to back up the American worker. We'll be there to save the economy and make sure the little guy, the small business owner has it, you know, the best. And fuck that. They show that they do not care. Not only do they not care, they still get major kickbacks from lobbyists for it. So... I don't know. For me, anyone that's Republican or Democrat, if you still stand behind your party, I'm disgusted with you because they're both, you know, horrible.
Well, I think like party politics have like really lost in their way, right? I mean, like why do we even define things as party politics anymore? Anyways, like more or less, like you're just representing a cause that is more or less supportive of a way to try to commandeer corporate interests, right? Like, if you're on the far left, your agenda is to ratify, right, and reorient how the corporate society operates in the United States so that it's more inclusive. If you're on the far right, then you're more about like maintaining the status quo of power and centralization of capital through sort of like the old school ways of understanding it. But both sides are trying to achieve the same thing, which is basically more or less, I want to be controlling the coffer.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then where do your values lie, right? Like, I think if we start to think more clearly about this understanding of like, you know, ethics in a way, like to what extent can you say to yourself, well, I'm a Republican or a Democrat, and therefore I believe in these certain principles because my principles don't align with this understanding of equality. And equality is defined by redistribution, and distribution is defined by a bottom line, which could be probably easily quantifiably measured through some capital gain. But you're still looking for individual vested interests rather than that of the actual community, though you try to say that you're looking for the community, but that's complete bullshit, right? Because if you define the community as the minority class of people who are not being represented, right? Because for the large extent, the majority class in any society is representative of what the majority class is, which in the United States is more or less white Anglo-Saxon. If you go to China, you know, it's Chinese. If you go to fucking Vietnam, it's all Vietnamese. You go to Europe, whatever. It is always representative of the majority class, right? So what you're saying, if you are in fact a leftist, say redistributivist, is you're actually trying to take the larger pot of money for a smaller group of people. And then therefore you're actually for less of a greater good, right? If redistribution is about equality and not absolute power, then maybe there is some sense in that, but they're not trying to achieve that. I mean, so for instance, like a lot of these, this chatter that's been going on recently, maybe we shouldn't even jump into this. We'll just leave this one alone.
But no, let's jump into it.
I feel like we don't really need to get into it. I was actually going to bring up that book, White Fragility.
And that's just trash. Didn't want to read it. We'll never read it. If I ever see that book, I'll just walk right past it. Won't burn
right.
it.
So a lot of the debate that you and I have had in the past about sort of reading a lot of these scholars that are quote unquote critical theorists or whatever have kind of fallen by the wayside because I'm just like, look at him. I don't want to get involved in that shit. I've been around it too much. I was rather abused by it by several quote-unquote scholars that are critical theorists, and I just have no desire to ever enter into that 4A discussion ever again in my life.
I will more than be happy to fight anyone on critical theory because it's mostly trash. It's 95% trash.
I think this is like the problem between like the soft sciences and the hard sciences, right? And we've had this conversation as well, and yes, Adam, I agree with you methodologically what the principles of that actually mean or whatever. But if you don't have a baseline, which like that's the issue, right, in like sort of these critical theory areas.
You know, the thing that you mentioned, soft sciences and hard sciences, I don't like that term. I think there's science and then there's humanities, and that's it. Anytime anyone wants to put science, like put science into the humanities, what they're doing is they're fucking everything up. They're doing a Marxist thing. Marx really wanted to scientificate history. Like, you can't do that because there's the human element of interpretation in there. And the moment you have interpretation, there's no science. It's just interpretation.
Right. Well, I think like that's the thing. Like, there's always interpretation of data. I think, you know, but it's much more so the case in, the humanities, whatever you want to call these. I think ultimately moving forward, this is the way we need to think about society in a very real way. It's like, look, you can have a rigorous or say somewhat objective worldview. And you could say, look, here's the baseline. Like if you want to talk about, say like, you know, split it up. I was reading Pascal's Pensées recently.
Ooh, great book.
And I think it's very good, right? Like his dad kind of viewed him as the world. He's like, look, I think mathematics give you, they fill your mind and they occupy the space so much so that it's hard for you to actually reincorporate other things into your life. So he was like, look, until you're like, basically coming of age, you're not going to have like a mathematical base, regardless of sort of like the way through which Pascal, eventually really scaled himself and I guess you could say professionalized himself or what do you want to call it in the field of mathematics.
But he was also a polyglot. That's the problem. He applied mathematics to a lot of everything. I don't agree with that because the moment you ingest mathematics and the idea of, you know, a definite into something, you can automatically make it an ideology.
Well, I mean, I would say for him, like his ideological principle probably was stated given his sort of like devout devotion to, I can't remember like the exact name, but it was like a sect of Christianity, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think like ultimately moving forward though, it's sort of like, this is always the problem, right? Over all these years of whatever quasi experience, whatever we call it in academia and things of these sorts, there's always trying to bring the two together. And it's like, look, why can't we just operate in two different fields, right? It's like what we should say on a daily basis. It's like, what are your virtues? What are your beliefs? How do you want to see justice in the world? And then by asking and sort of like creating very decent, I would say, applicable questions, then you can actually take the tools that exist to us through, say, hard science or science and quantifiable skill sets to actually analyze them in a pretty decent way on top of sort of your already very, very solid base understanding of what actually is taking place through the things you actually just understand in daily interaction.
But I agree with that.
It's so difficult to actually convince people that you can do these things separately, right? They want everything all at once, right?
Well, not only that, but it's difficult to actually have it separate because automatically people love connecting things. I mean, that's just the way we are as
Adam,
creatures.
For instance, and I wanted to lead it into this, you have shown maybe not legally or whatever, different information you've received from polling data to Clint and myself that you see. And it's like, look, yeah, that's fine. But to what extent is this even closely verifiable, right?
Oh,
like,
no, dude. Polls are usually... Dude, most people who take polls have nothing to do.
Where are the polls?
They lie to you about 30% of the time. And that's... polling data doesn't mean shit.
So I'm curious, because going back to this idea of like big money owning big media, pushing whatever they're trying to do, where are the polls, right? Like, you have to ask yourself this as well. Like, okay, fine. If you want people to respond to polls, you're probably going to have to go to people that are interesting in answering polls, right? Like, I've done this. I've worked in survey data. I've done all these things. So it's like, well, you need to basically eliminate, you know, sort of like the least probable outcome, which would be like, you know, pursuing people that have distrust for the media, right?
Exactly.
So that would be individuals who probably... are rather skeptical, that may or may well not be very well read, but they have sort of these belief sets about like media in as much as like they're not going to be diehard Fox guys in the same sense they're not gonna be diehard CNN guys because they just don't
want
to believe
in this
shit.
Well, that's not true, because some of these people like Fox and MSNBC make sure to pull their own viewership.
Right.
They focus with it.
So yeah. What I'm saying is like CNN and Fox, those people would be like the type of communities that would be willing to answer these questions are probably, in fact, the lower level of individuals that are actually being represented in these surveys, right? So, in other words, the larger pool of the data would be people who are just like, fuck that, I'm not going to answer this, right?
Yeah, that's a majority. That's close to like 60% of most people do not want to share their information.
We have no fucking idea what's going to take place. And I think ultimately, too, it's like, dude, look, we can read the policies. We can get involved in everything else. Like recently, I had to do a pretty deep write-up on like Biden's energy policy, which is basically... Green, like it's basically like the Green New Deal 2.0, but like there's some valid points that are raised. But again, it's like it's complete hogwash, right? Because it's like saying, oh yeah, this is totally going to happen, regardless of the fact that it still has to pass fucking Congress, right? So it's again, it's another fucking issue that nobody wants to dive into, but they still all believe like, oh no, but this is the way forward, and we're like marrying all these ideologies together. We're going to save the world, and the Paris Agreement is the greatest thing that ever happened.
Dude, anyone who uses the term "this is the way forward" automatically reminds me of Mao, and to that person, I say, go fuck yourself.
Right. Well, I mean, again, like I think honestly, there's like two things here, right? If you can't understand the fact that like. I would say in a positive way, the majority of American people, or I would say people that are polled globally, the polls are probably often misrepresented because they're probably not actually being answered by the majority of people that live within the society. Diversify it, right? Because you have to actually create sort of like a scaled, like it has to be a randomized test, right? So
it depends.
It's not random.
Depends. Depends on who orders the poll. Because sometimes you want to... you know, make sure, like, let's say Gallup, when Gallup pulls somebody, they're not pulling it, so, you know, they just do it. They have somebody that hires them to pull that data, so then that data becomes useful to whoever ordered the poll. In that way, you have to, in some way, make sure that it's favorable to whoever ordered the poll, so then they come back.
Right, but my point is this. It's a very simple one, and I think anybody who's worth their salt that does anything in data analysis, whatever, would say the first thing that you have to 100% try to do if you're going to actually have a poll is randomize it. Well, if we can actually come to the kind of general supposition that the majority of people that are reasonable and rational probably won't answer the poll or aren't actually accessing these sites where the polls are being administered, then your test sample isn't going to be random. It's going to be directly fitting that side of whatever spectrum you're operating on.
Well, let's be honest and just say what we're both thinking is that polling is bullshit. A pseudoscience. Yeah, it's a pseudoscience. snake oil salesmanship.
So. 100%. Well, let me finish my point. I think it's hilarious, right? This is the final point. I just think it's hilarious that, again, 2020, we're repeating exactly what happened in 2016.
Yeah.
And nobody's saying it. Nobody's like, I consume so much news media. It's retarded.
No, I stopped. Well, I just can't do it anymore.
I have to watch this garbage for my job. And I think it's insane. Nobody is saying it.
Well, the way I see it is we're in the middle of a neoconservative civil war. The Democrats and the Republicans are both neoconservative, and there's some sort of twisted version.
Well, can you explain what that means, neoconservative?
I don't know how to explain it, but I know what I mean when I say it. And you know exactly what I mean. This idea of globalizing and making sure that your side is always...
Represented
in some sort of way, and there's always profits and there's always growth, and then there's always that noble lie that makes sure that you become superior to your enemies, and I think that's what's happening. The Democrats and the Republicans just really, really support this neoconservative sort of ideology, but the Republicans are looking at it from an economic perspective, while the Democrats are looking at it from an ideologically economic perspective, where ideology equals the economy. Meanwhile, on the other side, it's the economy equals the economy. The sales and the market itself is what makes a country great. And I think that what we're seeing is not equality versus inequality. We're not seeing left versus right. We're seeing a civil war within the politics and the ideologies of the neoconservatives that grew from late 1980s, I'd say.
Interesting. I think that fits well with sort of my thinking about, like, more or less we're really operating within the same group of people, right? And I think this is what always, again, it's like, does media just not want to say it or what? I mean, basically we're being told by, six one way, half a dozen the other. Both of these people are representatives of the elite, no matter how want to scale it. I mean, I think it's hilarious. The balls on the DNC, given the amount of media about Bill Clinton being involved with Jeffrey Epstein, to still
so
have him
Trump.
Be a...
That's the thing. Both of these folks were...
Adam, he's already in power. But to have Bill Clinton be a speaker at the DNC...
Oh, yeah, that was ridiculous.
It's just like, they don't... I think that's the point. Like, if you want to just break it down in the most simplest way, in the current era of the way people view the Republican versus the Democratic Party, right? The Democratic Party is for everybody. It's for the lower class or whatever. It's for the underrepresented. It's for the people that are trying to redistribute. It's for all these things that they say they're trying to do. And the Republican Party is for the elites, right? Which would mean anybody who makes over $200,000 a year, more or less. That's like upper 1%. Is it really?
200K is 1%?
Yeah, as an individual, not as a household.
Damn.
If that was the actual case, right, then why in the fuck do you see the things that are taking place on the Democratic side that are just absolutely unutterably preposterous? In the sense, like, why would they not coalesce and just work with Trump to try to give somebody who is basically unemployed, facing all these hardships, especially in the United States, if you're unemployed, that means therefore you probably don't have health insurance. And if you have to go get like a $300 COVID test to try to get a new job and all these different things, right? There is no mobility on the Democratic Party to support people.
A lot of the politicians on the Democratic side are children of the 1960s. The people who were involved in the 1968.
Say it better. Say it better, Adam. People in the Democratic Party are fucking baby boomers. They don't care about anybody but their own shitty generation. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to ride that to the grave by eking out every last penny they can fucking get from all the new youngsters that are just trying to make their way in the world.
Yeah, this it's society true. They want to so shuck fucked. Them. That's what they're doing. They're selling them this idea of an ideal. Like, they're selling them a utopia that will never come. Like, why are you fucking looting instead of, like, you know, thinking of some way to work? Like, oh, but there's no job. Like, whose fault is that? Nobody's. Nobody's fault. It's just like, it happened. So it's time to start fucking thinking in a completely different way instead of pointing fingers. Pointing fingers has never solved anything.
Well, I'll tell you what's something different. Like, so if you're talking about jobs, like, here's one thing, like, the baby booming generation needs to stop doing, or, like, far left, is stop encouraging people to go and study critical theory and tell them to actually buckle down and do things that can actually get them a job.
Yeah, but that's the problem now, because the university is all critical theory. It's all these made up bullshit ideas. Like, we need to go back to Aristotle. We need to go back to not Plato, but the Socrates and, like, Michel Montaigne. And we need to start looking at, like, the university, what it's meant to do. And that is to prepare you for life and not fucking prepare you for this wonderland that doesn't exist. Like...
I think, like, one of the ways forward too, as well, is I think just, like, the majority of Americans should probably enter into the trades, right? Like, you know, it's funny to me, there's so many different dichotomies that exist to me now moving forward that are all so, I don't know, just antithetical to each other. Like, it's like, you know, what does the Democratic Party support? It supports this idea of, like, free healthcare for people who are disenfranchised, who are supported by a state that allows them to pursue, you know, things that aren't preventative, right? So, like, allows them, like, say, for instance, like, okay, look, I'm a nationalized healthcare center and I want to give you money because obviously you don't have a job. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to give you a debit card. Okay, now you have this debit card because you don't have a job, but with this debit card, you can go buy necessities. Okay, yes. Within this necessities, they allow people to buy things like fucking ding-dongs and donuts and all this other shit.
Yeah.
It's like, if you really want to basically bring this down, it's like, oh yeah, you're infringing upon their civil liberties. Their civil liberties are already infringed upon based upon their purchasing power, right?
Exactly. So
if they can't actually afford to do what they're trying to do, and you're trying to give them the upper leg, and then there's also this huge cloud over the American sort of society, which is healthcare, you just say, look, we're going to create a new preventative scheme, which means basically, if you want more money from the government, if you want whatever, you're gonna have to, like, go for walks. You're gonna have to basically, like, buy healthy food. You're gonna have to, like, there could be so much incentivization, but the actual antithetical point to all this is like, the healthcare system, it's only there for after the fact, right? So it's like, oh, now I have diabetes, now I have heart disease, now I'm all fucked up. Can you please give me all these pills? Of course we can, because
we've got so many of them. Which one you want? You want one for Monday and seven for Tuesday? The amount of money,
dude, it's like, this is why every single fucking national sports stadium is named after a goddamn pharma company, right? And, like, while people are there, they're just sat there shoving hot dogs and nachos down their gullets. It's just like, dude,
they're eating,
like,
healthy food. They're eating American food.
Mass confusion, man. I think I don't know, man. Like, I'm not, like, Jimmy Dore in the sense, like, the world is coming to an end. But I do think we're at an inflection point of just, like, hyper stupidity.
No, right? I think it's just a paradigm shift. We're in the middle of a real paradigm shift. None of this bullshit that's like, oh, now, you know, history's over. Like, get the fuck
Adam,
out
I would,
of here.
Adam, Fukuyama. I would say paradigm shift, maybe, in a sense. But then it's like, I see people who are, I believe, to be relatively smart. And they go on Facebook and it's like, here we go, baby, 2020, Biden, Harris. It's like, what the fuck, dude? Like, I thought you were a rational thinking person. Like, yes, Trump, whatever. Okay, look, if there was any candidate basically that was somewhat rational, say Buttigieg came along, say, who knows? I mean, obviously, we both like Tulsi. If she would have come up, Bernie, whatever, 100% would have gone, I would go vote for them, right? But Trump, it's like almost like I need to go. I mean, I'm almost like, have trepidation that I need to go vote for Trump because I'm so nauseous about what the fuck could take place if it's
Biden,
Harris.
I think a lot of people are thinking that. I think a lot of people are going to go vote for Trump silently, and he's going to win again. Because, I mean, these Democratic politicians are denying that there's riots going on. That blows my mind. There's literally hundreds, if not thousands.
Wasn't Andrew Cuomo said in New York State you could only protest if it was Black Lives Matter?
Yeah. Yeah, it's unbelievably
insane. Isn't that directly infringing upon your First Amendment?
Yeah, of course it is.
This isn't a problem?
It's a huge problem, but nobody wants to talk about that.
What the fuck is going on? I mean, it's just madness. It's utter madness. It is utter fucking madness. I can't believe it.
Dude, it's like the times of fucking Nero and Caligula. Everything's got to be fucking breads and circuses. And they're throwing bread and they're playing all these political circuses so that people can be distracted and not think.
Well, you know,
everything's driven by such passionate emotion. That
can you give us a little bit more background on Nero?
On which one?
On Nero, just anything.
Oh, Nero was the emperor of Rome who decided that it is time for a rebirth. And he decided to burn down Rome. And while Rome was burning, he played on his lyre so the people would be calmed by his music and the fire. He was also responsible for killing hundreds of thousands of Christians because this he blamed the plague and the economic vows and the problems in Rome on the Christians. So there was huge games. He gave out a whole bunch of food for everybody, and then decided like, this is it. It's time to just burn down Rome, and see. So he did. He killed one of the greatest minds in all of history, Seneca, and murdered his wife and killed a whole bunch of other people just so he could his madness could be quenched.
See, so it's funny that people would probably relate that to Donald Trump, but I think it's the inverse, right?
No, I think right now Nero is the ideology of the Democratic Party. I think this,
I agree.
This equality and
the bread is fucking Netflix.
Yeah, it's all just, I don't know. The best way that I describe it is zoocracy. The slating of certain things and certain ideas. I can never pronounce this word. Compartmentalization of your ideology, of your reason, of what you want as entertainment and what you want as a human being into separate bins so that you can't combine either of them to create a full human being. It's the most powerful way of specialization. Everything is so specialized and everything is so detailed that you're unable to see the big picture. And I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing Nero through this putting everyone in their own little individualized cell that they think is so important without seeing the whole zoo that they're in.
Right. I think that's a very good point. That's one of these things that I'm just concerned about. I've always seen in my entire life, for better or good, that just people are sheep. And I'd say, like, in this scenario today, it's at an all-time high, man. And, I think it's interesting to raise these questions.
But the thing is sheep are able to defend themselves as a group. These people aren't sheep. They're just fucking...
Well, I mean, what about Antifa?
They're like these fish in the sea where they swim in one direction. They're unable to defend themselves.
You saying fish don't have feelings, Adam?
No, they don't have feelings.
Kurt Cobain is right.
Dude, fish sticks.
Yes. Oh man, Jerry, he deserves some fish sticks.
Some fish sticks.
Oh no, that wasn't Jerry. That was Kanye West.
Kanye West is a gay fish.
Too confused there. But I think this is where we're headed, and I think it's hilarious today. It's like it's almost antithetical to what I just said, but it's like, in a way, I think this is like a revival of like why people need to actually understand civics and ethics and philosophy.
Agree. Yes, I think there needs to be a return, like I've mentioned, to Aristotle, to philosophers of the past, and we need to toss away the ideology of power is everything. This Foucault and Derrida sort of nothing is real, nothing exists, everything's about power, because it's not true. It's definitely not true.
Like the patriarchy and tyranny, right? Like that whole narrative just needs to die because it's so fucking ridiculous to state like.
Yeah, because you have a perpetual enemy. You have a perpetual villain in anything and everything, and that's,
they probably lie next to you in bed.
Yeah, true story. Anyone that doesn't have the sex organ you have is automatically an enemy.
Well, you sent me that short clip the other day on YouTube about what would we call it? I mean, it was on Joe Rogan's podcast where it was one of these authors talking about gender dysmorphia, and I guess evidently now that's considered hate speech. But it's along the same lines of this idea of like a young child, especially pre-puberty, that's basically, associating this ideology that they're the opposite sex, right? Or whatever. But in your eyes, you're just calling that a mechanism of a gender association, regardless of sort of like, the biological perspectives and physiology that creates that person to be either male or female, right? See, in order to actually propagate civilization. But
oh yeah, mm-hmm.
But yeah. I just think it's hilarious. Like, I mean, look at how ridiculous the debate. Like, I was like lying in bed last night, and it was a terrible, terrible thing to be doing in bed. I was thinking about Judith Butler.
Why?
And I was thinking about like gender performativity, and I was like, why? Well, first of all, why am I thinking about this? And secondarily, I was like, how ridiculous are we in society that this is what we've come to basically base all of our conversations around, like in terms of what mass media focuses on, in as much as like there was one guy, I can't remember the name of him. Now, there was one broadcaster this week who got in a little bit of trouble, who said something a little bit more derogatory. There was another hockey coach.
He used the word faggot. Was that?
No, that was the guy who was, a baseball broadcaster. But the guy who was a hockey coach, when they came and asked him about, hey, we're super curious, like, what's your take on the bubble, right? Because they're being responsible and they're actually sitting in their little bubbles and not getting COVID. And he was like, you know, it's pretty nice. Like, they're not that distracted because no women are around. And oh my God, like people like Jay Adonde and all these fuckers on ESPN went ape shit, and they were calling for this guy to have sensitivity training. And it's like, wait a second, like the guy's literally saying like they're not out getting drunk fucking around because like they literally can't. They can't go to clubs, they can't go to bars, you know, they can't sleep around. So they're all staying healthy. So they're actually focused on the game. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no. Like in this day and age, Adam, I swear to God, if you ever say that men still want to have sex with women, you're a fucking bigot. You're a part of the problem. You're the patriarchy. You're a tyrant.
So like, what about women wanting to have sex with men? Is that
that's completely okay? That's Whitney empowering. Cummings, you know, she's perfectly okay.
Yeah, that's trash is what that is. That is the scientification of everything. That's doesn't mean anything.
Well, you know, if we're all biologically equal but gender is performative, then we're all guilty of the same fallacies, which would be hypersexualization of the opposite chromosome, I guess you could say, right?
To me, I think that sounds like
that's the thing, right? That it's like if that's okay for a woman to hypersexualize certain aspects of her life, but it's not for a man, then again, this is like how you have this regressionary mentality of like how this all fails.
Yeah, but it's like I don't even want to talk to anybody that thinks that way. Like no, you figure yourself out. Like I don't want you wasting my time. Like I have things to do. You Google gawking at me doesn't mean anything.
But I do. I'm thinking curious. So like gender performativity, like, you know, I don't have a child, but like my siblings do and a lot of our friends do. And obviously Clintonius Maximus, who unfortunately couldn't join us tonight, has too many to count.
he's got 17 now.
He's virile, you know. He spreads that seed. He jerks off at night and he has one in the downstairs the next morning. But I think, you know, for like people that are like hyper feminists or whatever you want to call it, gender, whatever, whoever belongs to these groups, I wonder if any of them have kids.
Hopefully they don't.
Because like, I think like that's a pretty good
baseline. I think they treat their kids probably like shit.
Well, I think it's a pretty good baseline, right? Like if you have a child, whatever sex, and you still follow this line of psychosis, then like you are fucking out there.
So I can't remember, maybe Clint sent this in our group chat, but maybe I just saw it somewhere. So there's this ultra feminist who, you know, who hates men and hates everything about men, blah blah blah. Well, it turns out she has a baby boy, and she gave a keynote speech somewhere a few months ago about, you know, feminism and all that. And she went on to trash her child for 5 minutes for being needy, for being the typical male, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody asked her how old he was, and he's like, oh, he's 3. So what she was doing is that she was more or less just hating on any 3-year-old, but mistaking, you know, 3-year-olds for all all males. So it proves to you that these people are retarded, because they don't look at children as children. She looked at her own kid, her own flesh and blood, as you know, some sort of horrible male that she gave birth to, and not as a being for some sort of future potential.
Well, that goes back to like, you know, Maoism, right? Like the one child policy that basically preferred men over women, right, for production in society. And I think, I mean, like they're all guilty of the same faults, which I just find to be hilarious. But I do find it crazy to think like, I mean, if you've ever spent time around a 3-year-old,
oh, dude, they're horrible. I mean, it's got to be said. Three-year-olds are just pure ego. It's just pure ego.
Right. Well, they're very demanding, and they are what they are. But I think ultimately, as well, it's just sort of like, why would you ever think that thing has the ability to decide anything?
Dude, it wants to be a boy or it wants to be a girl. Like, you gotta just give it the right to do that. It's like, yeah. Come on now, get out of here. Like, I can't remember who said it, but like, if that girl or if that boy wants to be a girl and she's 7, you know, give her time until she's like 18. Have her jerk off for the very first time and realize what it means to just come, you know. Have that kid be like, oh, wait, this is how, you know, even if the kid's gay, like, all right, cool. But like automatically transform the child into something it isn't. Like, you, that kid hasn't even had the time to, like, watch his first porn, beat off to something, you know, read a naughty book. Give him a chance to do that before it decides if it wants to be, you know, a fucking, I don't know, a G-cat or a zebra platypus, the fucking hybrid.
Well, now I know what you're doing on your Sunday morning. Those That's naughty right. books. But I would say it's hilarious. I mean, you know what the problem is? Like, now we're stuck having these conversations. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, for a while, until we get tired. Like, I get tired of this. Anytime anyone brings this up to me at a bar, I'm like, I just don't want to talk about this. And they're like, oh, why? You a bigot? Like, no, it's just boring. Like, we're going to have the same conversation I've already had before. Like, let's talk about something interesting. Like, I don't know. You, how many testicles you have? Oh, you have one? Wow, how did that come about? Like, tell me something interesting instead of this old, you know, bullshit of power empowerment and how everything has to be, you know, revolved around somebody's victimhood. Like, I'm not interested in anybody's victimhood. Oh, so you got abused by an uncle. Congrats. Like, a lot of people have. Like, get over it. Just live your life.
Yeah, I think that's what I was actually talking to somebody the other day about that. And I was like, yeah, I think, like, you know, what happens in life is people, they refuse to realize that like 80% of your day is probably shit regardless.
You know? Oh, it's just like, boring. It's just like, you know.
Yeah, it's just mundane and yeah. You have to do it to exist and you have to do it to try to like pursue something you're trying to do. But I think like the majority of people just don't want to do that. And then like they find a way to fucking neglect it and then they find a way to medicate and they find a way to underperform and just, you know, self-loathe, and it just is a kind of a vicious cycle where they just can't grab themselves by the balls and be like, look, man, I gotta man the fuck up, or whatever you want to call it, work through it and just get on with my life, you know. Like, I can't tell you how many like people I've seen in my life in like their 40s, like, oh yeah, but when I was younger, my family went through a bad divorce. It's like, how does that affect you at 40?
It's like, you know what, this is the way I see it. All these assholes who are stuck in the past, they have depression because that's all they think about. They think about the past. All these assholes who have anxiety, they're stuck in the future because all they think about is their job and what's going to come. Like, the moment you start tossing away the past and the future and start just living, like, just start thinking about what's happening and just, like, focus on yourself, your family, and the people you love, then automatically everything changes. Right now I'm reading this wonderful, wonderful book by Edith Hamilton called The Greek Way. And she talks about how the Greeks thought, and you know, she writes, it's a wonderful book. I highly recommend it. And in it, she said something, she quotes, I can't remember if it's Sophocles or one of these, you know, ancient Greek playwrights. And the playwright says that no good and no evil happens to good people. And I thought about that for a while, and I'm like, what the fuck does that mean? And I'm like, you know what? That's a really good point. If you're a good person, good or evil just don't mean anything because everything is in some way just is. It just is, and it forms you into the person that you are, and everything and your outlook and everything like that. Good and evil are just ways of us pretending that something happened to us that shouldn't have happened, you know, oh, this was good for me, that was bad for me, and they blame Lady Fortune for their flaws, or for the flaws of you know, God or whoever is punishing them. But in the end, it doesn't mean anything. It's just like, all right, something bad happened to me, good, move on. Something bad happened or good happened to me, okay, good, well,
like that,
move on.
Why do we have this sense of self that like nothing bad should ever happen to you?
No, I think a lot of the bad stuff that like, does think, happen to like you, some really good.
I was hearing the other day is like, you know, a lot of people were saying like, yeah, like, you know, what's kind of funny is like adversity brought about the best qualities in myself. But when I had children, I wanted them to have the least adversity possible.
Mm.
It's like so backwards.
It's like that Turkish saying, you know, what is it? Great leaders create good times create weak leaders create bad times create great leaders. So it's like that cyclical nature of, you know, suffering, pleasure, suffering, pleasure, suffering, pleasure.
Well, I mean, you know, that's what I also think is hilarious, too. I was actually just talking to my buddy in Switzerland, and I was like, he was like, yeah, I'm in the house share, whatever, like downstairs, they have like a hot plate. He's like, they don't have a microwave. I was like, you know what would be great for like most Americans? Would be to like just go live in a situation where like you have to hang dry your clothes and you have to whatever, share a kitchen and you have to like have a bar fridge and like just the community aspect to realize like everybody in the United States has like a 6-foot fridge and like a, you know, a double case oven and like anything you need, big kitchen, like all this shit. And it's like, I don't know, like people are just so fucking self-centered. They don't realize that like there's actually a lot of happiness in the world that exists without a lot of these general commodities that people stress over constantly in terms of like, you know, chasing the perfect household, which would be just basically a fucking structure, right? It's like what happens in this country is we chase the most basic principles of existence, which would be like food, shelter. I don't know what the last one would be.
I don't know, happiness probably.
Maybe something like that. But we'd still say like food and shelter, right? And it's like food doesn't have to be this hyper extravagant thing you do every day, but it should be something that's conscientious to sort of achieve the highest level of well-being. And shelter, yes, you should have a comfortable residence, but it shouldn't turn into this like circle jerk of keeping up with the Joneses, right? It's,
I agree.
It's just a place where you take a shit and sleep.
With regards to take meals, I think me and you've had a pretty good conversation about this, how every meal that you have with somebody else should be like a meditation on why you're having a meal with that person as opposed to just having a meal. And I think not a lot of people think about that. They just think like, oh, I'm just having another, you know, cheeseburger with Jeff, instead of being like, oh, it's nice to see Jeff again. I'm just having a cheeseburger while I'm actually just having a conversation with him.
You know what's funny about that? And actually, it's a movie that I now need to rewatch is Dinner with Andre.
Oh, yeah. But that's a fucking phenomenal movie.
Well, one of the best. And I think like that's one of the things. So, you know, no, none of you ever watched Dinner with Andre. Actually, I'm not even going to try to recount it now because I can't think of it off the top of my head. But
it's just two guys eating dinner and they're just talking about everything.
Like life and like where they've been. And it's like old friends catching up. And it's like that's like sort of like the stereotypical thing in life where, you know, it's kind of why this podcast exists, right? Because we all went in different directions and then now we're all coming back together to try to recreate, you know, a baseline to continually like, you know, keep up with one another. Because obviously, like, life happens, and if you don't make the time for it, you probably won't do it.
Yeah. I mean, not only that, everyone has an excuse. And it's easy to just be like, well, that's I'll go with the excuse as opposed to, like, the action. It's like it goes back to that Schopenhauerian will. If you have the will in you, it will create itself. If you have the will but choose not to follow it, then you're just going to become...
But I think also, like... You know, a very important point you brought up about like this idea of like, okay, like don't think about the past, don't think about the future, think about now. And it's like, that's sort of like the mediation of Zen, right? And that's why I think Japanese culture is super fascinating with a lot of the things like honor, doing the right things, focusing on what you're doing. And this is why, like, if you think about the basic principles of mindfulness, it's not like this hyper ethereal understanding of like Eastern philosophy. It's just like taking your time. And I think in this day and age where we're just hyper engrossed with like, you know, big data, everybody has all these platforms of social media, we always have all these activities, like take the time to enjoy doing the dishes.
Yeah.
Take the time to enjoy doing your laundry, enjoy mopping your floor, enjoy sitting quietly next to a lamp reading a book, enjoy watching your candle burn, enjoy your own quiet space, enjoy the simple things in life. Because if you can't come to doing that, then ultimately you're never going to be satisfied, because you'll never have all the money in the world. You'll never be, you know, the sultan of wherever. You'll never be, you know.
I want to be a sultan. Automatically, I got like, you know, cut like people's grapes. Heads off and just kind
grapes
of be
are
like,
good.
Yeah, Greeks are legit.
Grapes. Grapes are enjoyable.
Grapes. Oh, I thought you were talking about, okay.
I do some crepes. You know, it's just some crepes and some grapes.
I'll eat some crepes with some grapes.
But I mean, I just think that's the thing, dude. You know, everything's so complex. Everything's so fucking competitive. It's just over.
And everyone's too serious. I think that's the big thing.
Oh, yeah.
The moment humor like fades away and everyone's like, well, what did you mean by that? Like, I meant it as a joke. Get fucked. Like,
I remember
you should
somebody
take
told
everything
me,
sarcasm.
Somebody told me when I was finishing my PhD, they were like, oh, Jeff, like, you should just take things more serious.
I hope that's the worst
advice you can give anybody.
Oh, yeah. Like, the moment you take everything seriously, two things happen. You get a fucking heart attack, and you don't have boners anymore.
Well, I was just going to say, first of all, you become a douchebag.
That's also huge, too.
And, like, my biggest goal in life is to not be a douchebag. If that's one thing I'm trying not to do, it's that. And, You know, all the egotistical fucking self-masturbation that takes place in this world is just like, it's over, it's just too much. And like, you know, that's what I see when I watch anything on TV about all this garbage. It's just people stroking egos, and it's just people trying to fucking... Oh, it's like that age-old sort of understanding. It's like, are you contributing to aid because you actually give a shit, or are you contributing because it makes you feel good about yourself?
Yeah, it's the latter. It always, for me, it always goes back to Kony 2012. That pointless waste of time of catching Kony. And it's nothing ever came from it.
Mate, obviously nobody fucking cares about child
nobody
soldiers.
Cares.
Nobody cares. It was a global campaign that MTV and the whole world was trumping around. And at the end of the day, nobody cares. Like, I haven't Kony heard a fucking word about it since South Park.
Bunch of soldiers. That guy, what was the name of that guy that like ended up beating off in the middle of St. Francisco in the middle of the street?
I don't know, but I should remember this because that's a goddamn legend right there.
I mean, that's that. If you don't know what Kony 2012 is, it is the, for me personally, the epitome of narcissistic aid to any, even more powerful than the ice bucket challenge, which was just a huge waste of water.
Oh, there you go. That's another one. Whatever happened with that?
I don't know. Probably people realize, like, holy shit, ALS, there's a bunch of ALS. Food people that, like, you know, don't have drinking water, and we're just wasting it.
Hey, man, I need that ice bucket challenge, fool. I'm showing that I care about people with ALS.
Like, oh, congrats. Why don't you, like, do something as opposed to, like, here, I you know, I call out Clint Tallman and Jeffrey, and make sure that you pour a bucket of water on you, and then I won't do anything. I'll just spread the message.
Well, I think Adam, this is like becoming red, like, you know, and this is how we can kind of like, we can kind of tie down this podcast. And I think what we're ultimately hitting on is that everybody's a fucking hypocrite.
Oh, yeah.
And I think hypocrisy is the real fucking pandemic. It's not corona.
No, dude, racism. Racism.
Nobody
doesn't,
gives a shit.
Racism doesn't have a vaccine. There's no vaccine for racism.
Yeah. Fuck Kamala Harris. My God. I'll tell you what, man. That lady is a fucking goddamn shark.
That's a hypocrite. If you ever want to see a textbook idea of a hypocrite, Kamala Harris.
I mean, like, I think there's, like, I don't know if Dante wrote this. He should have, because he was targeting fucking lawyers. But he should have said, the next level below that shit are politicians.
I think there's politicians in Dante's Inferno. I think there's a lot of them.
Well, we need to jump into the Inferno then and have a conversation.
Hell yeah, we need to just break down that whole Divine Comedy because there's so much goodness in there.
Well, I think it's being represented today. I mean, this is the thing too. If you read sort of historical context, like, dude, not much has really changed. People are still shitheads. No. People are still zero sum. Nobody really wants to actually assist the greater good unless it actually exponentially increases their self-value, self-worth, whatever you want to call it.
The Greeks were the first ones that actually thought of that. They're like, we need to make sure there's a Greece, there's an Athens and Sparta, and everybody can do whatever the fuck they want. Then the Persians came, and they, you know, the Greeks fucked up the Persians a little bit, and then they got too confident. I think the same thing is happening in the United States. We thought, hell, we need some freedom from them Brits.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. And then the United States
too big for our britches.
The United States is at an all-time low, in my perspective. It's like, you know, it's hilarious. In this day and age, what's really surprising to me is, like, given the fact that we all have mass media, given the fact we can all see different trends, different societies, different things around the world, we still are just absolute, utterly, and just, like, we're just shitheads. And I think it's amazing to me to see, like, how we continue to act the same way that we have over centuries, or whatever you want to call it, over decades. And now we're like this new standstill where it's just sort of like nobody's talking about the real problem. And that is...
Real problems are hard to solve. It's easy to talk about these simple problems because there's no solutions to those. They're just imagined
problems.
Right,
but real problems take small steps, and small steps take courageous people. And I think we don't have anybody worth a fucking backbone in this society anymore.
No Cincinnatus. No Cincinnatus out there.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I don't know. I have no confidence in this country. That's why I'm biding my time until things are green-lighted and I get the fuck out of here, hopefully, in
Likewise.
April.
I got four more years in this country. Four and a half.
It's been a long four months. It's been a long 4 months, Adam.
it's been a long 7.5 years since I got back to this country.
It's just, God, it's, yeah, the government has certain issues in terms of like freedom of speech that, like, that's pretty good we can do, but then we also self-censor. I don't know.
I don't have a problem with the American government. I have a problem with the fucking retards and idiots who, you know, compare their, I don't know, their reading of the Huffington Post and BuzzFeed article this morning to somebody's, you know, higher education. They're like, no, well, I'm on the same smartness level as you are. Like, get fucked.
Well, I just think that the ultimate problem is the immediacy of information, the way through which people interpret it, and then the way in which they act upon it. And it's like they think they're doing something good. And it's just, you know what? It's just like these conversations, like you said. I don't even want to have these conversations. In that same sense, I don't even want to deal with these fucking people.
Yeah, because so, you know, automatically they'll say something stupid, and it's like, you know, for me, it's the age of information is really the age of ignorance. And all these people, you know, this equality and all this justice they care about, to me, is all I hear is, I want neo-feudalism again. Give me neo-feudalism. But I am the master and you are the serf.
Well, get I think, fucked. Adam, I think it's very easy to state this, right? I think regardless of mass information, people read way fucking less than they did in the past.
Oh, for sure.
There's too much entertainment, too much distraction. People don't read. And it's like, yes, you have all the things at your fingertips sitting in front of this computer. People don't read.
Dude, would you want to read when there's cat videos? Do you want to read when you can see a cat throw a cup off a table for 40 hours?
Yeah, nah. So people don't know anything. And I think that that's the thing. And it's like, at the end of the day, it's been sort of grandfathered into us now that it's like, no, but we're the age of information. We're the age of mass technology. We're the age of AI. We're the age of, you know, engineering advancement. We're the age of whatever. But it's like, yeah, you're also the age of ignorance. You don't actually understand the basic principles of the society in which you live.
True story.
I mean, ask somebody, honestly, as a test, you just walk around the street and ask people, like, all right, in say three sentences, tell me the basic functions of the US government. What are the branches? How do they operate? How does voting work? What does the Electoral College actually mean? Right? How does the judiciary vary from the executive? Basic things that anybody who's a part of a society should know. And see what their answer is. I guarantee you it's fucking retarded.
For sure. So people on that note, people don't want to know.
I've lost faith in everybody. Fuck
not everybody. I'm optimistic of the people. I'm very nihilistic of the systems, I guess. Maybe not the systems, but the way people reach for information.
I agree. So, Adam, on that note, I just want to say, in honor of David Goggins, we're back, motherfuckers.
Hells yeah.
And I'm looking forward to getting this going again. Hopefully Clint can actually stop going out with the boys, because we're the boys, but evidently he's lost in the woods. So Adam, we got to go find him, build a fire.
Well, we'll see. We'll see if it's cold out there and there's snow, Clint's got to go.
And until next time, guys.
Peace.
Like, subscribe. Thanks a lot. We'll see you around.